Senate Finance will come to order. Senator Bundy, Senator Hoffman, Senator Dyson, Senator Stedman, and Co-Chair Wilkin, welcome. I'm Senator Green. And today we have a couple of bills on the agenda. And as a reminder, cell phones are to be turned off, and as well as pagers. And the Senator Wilkin, did you have any questions, comments, or offerings to make? Okay. Senator Olson will be joining us in a minute. He's gone to check on the someone in the House who wasn't feeling well. We have a couple of bills today, Senate Bill 55 and House Bill 217. Although SB 55 is listed first, we'll go to House Bill 217. First, Representative Harris and staff Pete Feldman are here. And we'll see what we can learn about full and true value of taxable municipal property.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is John Harris. I'm representative from District 12, which includes areas that encompass some of your areas. So today we'd like to introduce House Bill 217, which is an effort to try and help a process that Senator Wilkin has been working on, trying to get unorganized areas to become organized. And what it does, I'll be brief, and I'll let my staff with me today is my staff, Pete Feldman, who's from the Delta Junction area. And I think online we have some other folks that want to testify or give public testimony on it. So what the intent of this bill is to do, if a unorganized area wants to organize and they don't want to use property tax to organize with, and they happen to have this big project called the Trans-Alaska Pipeline in their backyard, they don't have to incorporate the value of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline within their boundaries against the 4 mil equivalency that they have to meet under statute now for school contribution. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to get the Delta area to incorporate, and this bill is aimed at that. Doesn't mean just Delta, but it's really the area that the Trans-Alaska Pipeline goes through now that isn't incorporated. And so we're trying to give them a vehicle, another vehicle to encourage them to become organized. As you know, I've taken a fairly strong stance against mandatory forcing them to become a borough, but I realize, in my opinion, for their better interest, they should become one, and for our better interest as a body as well when it comes to funding schools and education. Mm-hmm. So with that, I'd like to turn it over for more detail to my staff, Pete Feldman. Pete?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Pete Feldman. I'm staff for Representative John Harris. Really, John covered it about as well as I would. You know, it's really about choice. This provides an opportunity to communities that would like to form boroughs to have a choice about how they're going to fund their schools and their borough activities. It's not mandatory. It just allows an opportunity for them to take the oil or gas properties out of the equation. When the state tax assessor comes and assesses the overall value of a borough, they can remove or choose not to include the value of the pipeline in that assessment. And that would allow the value to drop and give the opportunity, the overall value of the property would drop, and that would give the opportunity for the new borough to fund schools in new and creative ways. They wouldn't have to have property tax. They would be able to fund the borough through utility tax or through a sales tax or bed tax, whatever they may choose. But they wouldn't be forced to have property tax by having the property values included in the overall assessment of their borough. Having said that, I do have Steve Van Zandt online. He's the state tax assessor, and he's real good at answering the questions that come up with this. And, at your pleasure, Madam President, if you'd like to involve Steve Van Zandt, Madam Chair.
Very good. We also have Pete Hallgren on as well today. Senator Bundy.
Yeah, thank you. Is it fair to assume if the pipeline was included, the local contribution for schools would be substantially higher than if you excluded and then do a utilities tax or a trinket tax or whatever tax you want to do.
That's correct.
So the local contribution would be perhaps just token.
It would be relative to what the school districts and the borough choose to pay. If they are happy with the amount they can get from a 4 mil equivalency and they can make that work for them in their borough, then that would be their choice. We also need to point out that the money that normally would go into that borough won't go into the borough. From the tax from the pipeline, that money will stay in the state's general fund, and so it won't be coming out and going to the borough.
Madam Chair, can I respond to that as well, Senator Bundy? It's a good question, but here's the problem that we have in Delta. You have a lot of ag property, which isn't, the value isn't real high, but neither is necessarily the profit on the property. And so if you take the value of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline within the boundaries that they're talking about, the organized borough boundaries they're talking about here, the value is going to be so high that the people that would pay that, other than, of course, the state would pay a big portion of it because it would come out of the coffers that the state now gets, that they get from the taxation, the ad valorem tax on the pipeline. But if you are going to have a property tax to get to 4 mil equivalency, the other people in the area wouldn't necessarily have to pay as much. But they're not going to vote for the thing either, and we're getting a tremendous amount of problems with that, because they say, well, if you put a property tax on, we're never going to support it. We're trying to get a mechanism that we're trying to get an option for a mechanism that would get the people in the area to say, at least enough of them to say, we support going to a borough. And that's all I'm saying. I think, quite frankly, if it was me, I'd have a property tax on there, because they're going to get a whole lot more money by taxing the pipeline. But as their representative, I can't convince them of that fact, so I'm trying to give them some options here to say it'd be better for you to be a borough.
Senator Bundy.
Well, I agree. The people may not always be right, but they're always the boss. But is it realistic to think that there is enough? There are a lot of places in the state that are choosing not to pay any local taxes, choosing not to organize, and choosing not to support their schools. So if this option becomes available, is there a realistic other source of taxation that people would choose to submit to and to help support their schools?
Just in response to that through the chair, Senator Bundy. Well, you have the Pogo mine, which the community right now has been in negotiations with, and I think what would happen is they would come to an agreement with the Pogo mine, plus they would have to have some other type of taxation, whether it be tourism taxation or utility taxation or some sort of. They've already, I think, in their attempt to put together a borough charter to submit to the local boundary commission, I think that those concepts are there. They certainly, I know that the Pogo people don't want to be the sole source of revenue for the borough, but my understanding is that they have come to some sort of an agreement with them where they won't be, but it won't be so onerous that they can't operate, of course, which I don't favor either. But there are some other taxable entities there that could help carry the water.
Yeah, just comment if I may. I empathize with Pogo. I think some in the state are getting tired of being the sole source of income for some unorganized areas.
Understand.
Sorry, I didn't understand you. So. Are there any other questions?
I'll stop.
Senator Dyson?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. Would you run over again and kind of summarize what you perceive will be the impact on state monies in your sponsor statement or some of the articles there talked about the fact that it actually does, maybe the state would end up saving money?
Well, Senator Eisen, through the chair, what would happen, of course, is that if the local community decided to go with a property tax, they would have the ability to tax the pipeline, or they would tax the pipeline at the same rate they would tax the rest of the citizens. So if, in fact, and the state right now taxes the Trans-Alaska Pipeline to the tune of 20 mils,
yes,
and they get everywhere that the pipeline goes through an unorganized area, the state receives that full 2% of the value, ad valorem tax. If, in fact, a community said, we're going to tax the pipeline and ourselves, say 1% or 10 mils, then the state would get 10 mils and the local community would get 10 mils.
Right.
So, you know, I guess it's probably unfair to say that the state would necessarily would lose if the community decided to impose a property tax. But what this does is it says that it says that you wouldn't have to include the value of the pipeline if you chose not to put a property tax on. That's all.
Yeah. So what I was really interested in was if the newly organized borough or any of the boroughs decided to tax at 20 mils, then the state would get nothing, none of the money that they're now getting off of that piece of the pipeline.
Through the chair, Representative Dyson, that's correct.
And, but the state would not be having to pay the full freight for the school contribution. Have you guys looked at those kind of trade-offs? And I would guess that the 20 mil that this on the pipeline that the state might lose is significantly larger than what the state's contribution for education is in that jurisdiction.
Madam Chair, through Representative Dyson, through the chair. Quite frankly, I think if the at this present time, if the city of or borough of Delta Junction or whatever it would be called were to charge 20 mils or 2%, the full amount that they could, they'd bring in a lot more revenue than they would need to match their 4 mil equivalency. I think that's one of the things that a lot of the people in the community are very concerned about, is that you'd get a government entity in place that they would lose some control over, and that they would go to taxing too high, and of course the local residents who are, especially the ag residents who have a difficult time making it as it is, having to pay 2% on their ag property and whatever would not be in favor. So all we're trying to do here, you know, I come from Valdez, of course, and it's been charging 20 mils to everybody for a number of years now, including all the Trans-Alaska Pipeline property within its boundaries. So the state gets none of that revenue, but the community, of course, pays almost 50% of its school obligation, which is one of the highest in the state, percentage-wise. You know, but that's their choice, and the people there tend to agree to do that. People in Delta don't agree to do that. So this is again an attempt at a vehicle to encourage the people there to organize. That's all it is.
Let me continue. Yeah. Still didn't get at my awkwardly asked question. How much does the state now contribute to the schools in Delta?
Pete, do you have an answer?
I don't have an exact number.
Steve Van Zandt probably has that. Though.
Yeah, or Pete Halgren. I don't have a number, an exact number. I just know that, you know, the school district comes to legislature and they request money, and they get what the legislature is willing to give them.
Okay. Do you know how much the state, if the newly found borough formed, went to 20 mils on the pipeline, what would be the loss in revenue to the state?
Madam Chair, Senator Dyson, through the chair, I don't have those exact numbers. We could get them pretty quickly, and I think Steve Van Zandt probably would have that answer. He knows exactly what the state receives from the area. We went through all that before, and it was last year, and I don't have all those notes in front of me. But this, I think the state receives more money from the taxation of the pipeline within the Delta area than the community would be required to contribute if they put even a 2% tax, I mean the 4 mil equivalency. Because first of all, you have a 4 mil equivalency versus a 20 mil tax, a maximum tax that the state receives. So obviously 4 mils versus the 20 mils that the state receives. The state would still, let's say that the community only put a 4 mil tax on, which is what they're required to do, right? Then the state would still get 16 mils. But Steve Van Zandt would be able to answer your question. I've gone around it pretty successfully here, but I apologize.
Okay, before we go to Steve, Senator Wilken.
Well, I In rough numbers, and Sheila's looking at it, it's about $5 million, I think. Used to be $5 million, it's now $8.9 million that the state provides Delta Greeley REAA. And it looks to me from this, and Madam Chair, I don't know who did this sheet. Do you know who did this sheet?
Steve Van Zandt did last year.
Okay, then he could walk us through that because I think that's very interesting. But if, it seems to me that if they did the full 20 mils, they'd raise about $3.8 million. It's going from that piece of the pipeline with the ad valorem tax is generating about $3.8 million. So if they taxed it to that level and dipped into that revenue stream, they would pull out about the same amount, $3.8 million.
Senator Wilkins, just through the chair, is that if they tax at 4 mils or if they tax at 20 mils?
The 20 mils.
What is the title of that sheet, Senator Wilkins?
It's Upper Tanana Borough Evaluation Summary. It's a little hard to read, but I think Steve could walk us through it, and I think it provides a lot of a lot of answers to our questions.
Yeah, Steve, you've heard the discussion here. What can you contribute to help us out?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Wilkins is correct. If we walk through this real quick, the upper total number is $182 million. That's the...
Okay, Steve, could you give your name and title, please?
My name is Steve Van Zandt, the State Assessor for the Department of Commerce, 550 West 7th and Anchorage.
Thank you.
Okay, the total value of the Delta Greeley area is $501,500, round number. Of that, $182 million is local property, and $125 million was an estimate on the Pogo mine at 50% incomplete. That leaves about $194,500,000 for the pipeline. So of that, if the proposed borough were to levy just a minimum 4 mil, which is what their requirement would be for education, it would be in the neighborhood of $800,000, and I'm rounding them off. If they were to go to 20 mils, it would be close to $4 million or $3.8 million, as Senator Wilkins said. So there is a substantial difference there. The education, over on the right-hand side, the education local funding requirement, if we included the pipeline, the local contribution requirement would be $2.3 million. Without the pipeline, the local contribution requirement would be $1.2 million. So there is quite a bit of difference there, almost $800,000 for the pipeline involved there. That answer the question, Madam Chairman.
Any other questions, John? Is there anything else you can offer us, Steve, that we haven't yet mentioned?
Madam Chair, other than, you know, our department does support this, it just seems to us that it is an incentive to borough formation, and it actually doesn't cost the state any money if a local borough were to form. It certainly is not going to levy just a 4 mil tax. We don't have a borough in the state that levies a 4 mil property tax. So it could end up costing the state money on that, where it's taken out of the right-hand pocket and putting it in the left-hand pocket.
Steve, is there any region in the state that could misuse this, or could there be any unexpected, unintended consequences, or someone use it as a diversionary tactic?
Madam Chair, not to my knowledge. Okay. It's pretty straightforward, and there's only about three regions that this would even affect.
Thank you. Also online is Pete Hallgren. Pete, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. If you'd give your name and who you represent.
Okay, I'm Pete Hallgren. I'm the City Administrator for the City of Delta Junction. I have box 1625 Delta Junction.
Thank you.
I've worked with the state assessor on this matter for the past year and a half, and it's quite important. The Charter Commission turned in a borough petition to the Local Boundary Commission at the beginning of this month, so there is a formal signed petition that has been filed, the 250-some signatures, which is now being reviewed by the LBC. This We have two large commercial value holders or stakeholders in the proposed borough, which is basically exactly the size of the Delta Greeley School District, the REAA that's here. We've got the TAPS, as you've been discussing. We also have the Pogo Gold Mine. When you have two very large commercial organizations like that, with the state statute that says that you have to contribute 4 mils of the value of those organizations, that pretty much forces any new government into a property tax. There's no way to raise the kind of money toward the local school contribution without a property tax, the way the current statute is written. What the people who put the borough petition together did was say, look, TAPS is unique in that the state gets 20 mils out of it, and if we're forced into property tax, we're just going to be taking money from what the state gets out of the state's pocket. We're going to have to take more than is necessary, more than the 4 mils, because you need operating money to operate the local government, the new borough. So if you were forced into property tax here, the property tax would be larger than 4 mils. It would be, you know, 5, 6, 7, or 8 in order to take off the money necessary to actually operate the borough rather than just the straight pass through it. So the state would lose more off of TAPS than we would be putting into the school system under the local contribution. I'm sure that wasn't intended, but that's the way that the current state statute works. The borough commission sat down with Pogo and worked out a payment in lieu of taxes agreement, because the Pogo value is also high. So we now have a payment in lieu of taxes agreement with Pogo, which is in shorthand based on a 10 mil valuation on Pogo as it changes over the years. So that would bring us in the money necessary on Pogo to contribute toward the local school contribution. So it's not a token local tax if we take out the TAPS here, if you pass this bill. We're still paying the 4 mils on all the private property, taxable property in the borough, plus the Pogo value, which you know, is probably going to be well in excess of $200 million as of this point per year. So with the Pogo PILT agreement, the second thing we need to do is figure out how to handle the $200 million in value in TAPS. Without a property tax under the current statute, the local citizens would have to pull that money out of their own pockets to contribute to the school district, because the state's currently getting all 20 mils from the TAPS value. If you've got any specific questions, I'd be happy to go through them.
Are there any questions for Mr. Holger? Senator Wilkin.
Good morning, Pete. As a practical matter, as I understand it, in looking at Mr. Van Zandt's chart here, as a practical matter, you're going to take $1.2 million with your PILT agreement from the mine. So that essentially pays for your local contribution. And then the whatever the new borough chooses to take on as additional powers, platting or whatever, animal control or parks and rec, that then would come out of some other revenue stream. But what this bill does is enable you to take the pipeline off of the table, and with that action, take property taxes off the table. So you would be looking to fund the additional layer on top of the education requirement by some other means, and that could be a sales tax, a seasonal sales tax, income tax, utility tax, something else. Have I got that correct?
Yes, Senator, that's exactly correct. The borough petition as filed also includes a proposed fuel tax and a proposed power tax, and neither of those taxes is targeted at TAPS or Pogo.
Okay. Thank you. You know, sometimes Representative Harris and I have, and others have been behind the barn on this issue more than once, and you know how I feel about it. But it's interesting to note, and I applaud Mr. Van Zandt for going out and trying to come up with a number that the Delta Greeley REA is worth, because that was last done in 1996, and those preliminary numbers showed that was before prison and before the Pogo mine, and a lot of things have happened. And so he went out and came up with this chart that we see. It's interesting to put the value of the Delta Greeley area in perspective. If you take, if you look at the line where it shows total Delta Greeley area, REAA, is worth, by best estimates of the best mines we have in the state, is worth slightly over $500 million, $501 million. If they were a borough and you rolled that into our Alaska taxable book that we get, we don't have 05, but we have 04, and you divide that by the number of citizens or residents, and Mr. Haugren, I'm using the number 963, and so let's just call it 1,000. If you take that, their capacity to support government, capacity to support their schools, is, including the pipeline, about $520,000 per resident. So to put that in perspective, the average for the state is $99,000 for boroughs. Senator Bundy's Anchorage is $82,000. Fairbanks is about $71,000. The result of that division would put Delta Greeley area second across the state in wealth to support their schools. The highest, of course, is the North Slope Borough at about $1.4 million. And this would be $500,000, and everybody else then drops down to somewhere around $100,000. So, you know, that's why some folks get frustrated that people aren't stepping up to the plate and carrying their own weight. And I applaud the folks in Delta that have had the courage to go out and to try to craft their government. Because I can tell you that if that vote fails, there will be a full blast attempt at a mandatory borough. And that might be a borough that they don't like. But when you look at numbers like this, and when you really drill down, there's no reason whatsoever, nor has there been any reason whatsoever, for that area of the state not to make their schools better and help the people of the state support their schools. And I want to make that part of the record so that when this subject comes up again, we don't think of certain areas of the state as poor little places that don't have anything to contribute, because there are areas of the state that can contribute, and they can contribute just as the people that I represent can. And this data that Mr. Van Zandt has come up with certainly supports that suggestion. So I'd like to have that part of the record. And while I'm talking, the bill that Representative Harris has brought forward, and I support the bill, was an amendment that I offered the session before last to the House to try to get a piece of legislation through. So people have known that this is an impediment, and I certainly have agreed with it. And for those areas of the state that don't have to rely on property tax, and this wouldn't be the only one. I think there's four other boroughs that don't have property taxes to fund their government. That they have wealth elsewhere, that's just the way the system is, and we should allow them to enjoy those choices that they have by their locale. And that's what this bill does, and I'll be supporting the bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Bundy.
A question for Senator Wilkins. Discussing another, this general issue, I think, if I can quote you correctly, 2004, the earned income in the unorganized areas of Alaska was $504 million. That number ring a bell. I'm wondering, did you break it down by area, and would you have the earned income for the Delta Greeley area?
I do. I don't have that with us, but we can dig that out from our, we've done that since 1999, and I'm sure Sheila's got that.
Yeah,
handy somewhere.
I don't need
but
it right
you're
now.
Right. It was slightly over $500 million in the unorganized area, spread across to about 18,000 people, wage earners, in 2004.
Yeah, well, I'd be remiss if I didn't remind you that it, should they choose not to organize, there's another bill circulating that would help them pay for the schools. But moving on to a question for Representative Harris, you know, this sounds like a workable solution, but I'm always trying to look a little further into the future than just the next couple of years, and it would appear that, you know, the school contribution would be, I think fair to say, 100% supported by POGO. And any mine is a finite project. What is the life of the mine, and where would this area turn for financial support after the mine has played out?
Madam Chair, the Senator Bundy, the mine's projected life, I think, is 20 years, if I'm not mistaken. Senator Dyson might have a better idea than I do. It's a good question. I don't know the answer, but obviously, one of the concerns I have with any entity trying to any governmental entity trying to form or trying is that they overtax somebody. You know, I mean, it's something I fought against when I was the mayor in Valdez. They wanted to incorporate further up the highway, and I said, for what? You know, that's something we have to guard against. I think we have to be. I would certainly come down very strongly against even the government that I would represent in Delta if they tried to overtax some private sector enterprise. But it's certainly a fear that's out there, and I would caution them not to do that, because I think it would just bring probably the wrath of the legislature down around them in a way that even somebody like myself wouldn't support. So, legitimate concern.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there other questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Good morning, Mr. Speaker.
Morning, sir.
As we look at this bill, it looks like the title is broad enough to go ahead and put in a number of other concerns. And one of the questions I have is, how is it going to affect boroughs that are already organized? What kind of negative effect is it going to have on them?
Senator Olson, through the chair, it won't have any effect at all. The boroughs already that are formed have the right to charge property taxes if they wish. If they so choose to do so, they will have done it already, or they could. All this does is it gives another avenue to somebody who's trying to form to say, you don't have to charge property taxes. And you don't have necessarily. You still have to meet your 4 mil equivalency. How you do that is your choice. You don't necessarily have to charge property taxes. And if you don't charge property taxes, the assessed valuation of the pipeline within your area won't be toward your 4 mil equivalency, the valuation. But it wouldn't have any effect on existing organized boroughs.
So when the North Slope Borough land planner calls me down here and say, what is this bill that's going on here? It's going to negatively affect, or has the possibility of amendments or something being put in there that's going to negatively affect our ability to go ahead and raise money, what do I say?
The North Slope Borough is well, Senator Olson through the chair, North Slope Borough is well aware of this bill. They don't oppose it. We've talked to them in the past. They already, like I said, they already have the ability to charge the pipeline, and I think they do. They either do it or they do a payment in lieu of a tax, but I think they already charge the pipeline, and of course they charge the oil facilities, you know, in the borough. So they're already doing that.
The last question I have for you is, there was a comment made by Mr. Van Sant that this is a incentive for borough formation. How do you anticipate borough formation is going to be brought about if you don't have some type of big private sector enterprise that's going on within the region?
Senator Olson, through the chair, you have to understand the mindset, I guess, of the local people here. I mean, for those of us who represent organized borough or organized areas already, it's a different story. But there are, and Sarah Wilkin has tried for some period of time to educate the legislature and educate the people, some of the people in my district, into the value of actually becoming a borough. But what What has happened is the local people there do not want to pay property tax. Probably 70% of the people there don't want to. Well, I don't want to either. But, you know, you're required, if you're an organized area, you're required to contribute X amount to your schools and X amount to whatever else, you know, other services you want, depending upon what type of organized area you become. Well, a large group of the people in those areas, in Tok and Delta and some other areas, but Tok, Glen Allen, and Delta in my district or near my district are the three sort of prominent ones that stick out that say, you know, we don't want any government. Or if we do want government, we want the state to pay for it, and we don't want elected people that we represent to do it. So those of us who represent state government say, well, it's unfair for the state to do it all when you have the means. As was pointed out, you have the means to do some of your. So all this does is it gives them an option. Doesn't mean they have to do it. If they form a borough, they could charge property taxes. But if they charge property taxes, they have to charge a fair and true value for everybody, including the value of the pipeline within their boundaries. So what this says is you don't have to include it.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
I probably confused you more than you should not ask the question, but that's okay.
Well, you answered the question. The title is what has me concerned about.
We're not sticking anything in it. If you guys do, that's your business, but certainly not our intention to do anything. We've sent it to you, and now it's your.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Yeah, Senator Olson, Darwin just showed me that the original bill has a very short two-line title, and on the House floor, it was increased to do exactly the opposite of what you're talking about, to make it more prohibitive and to keep it in the confines of this subject, and so it could not be amended to include that without a title change and subsequent votes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Just a minute. Okay. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the Pogo mine, it says that the $125 million is 50% as of January a year ago. Do we know what percentage it is today, and when is it anticipated to be up to 100% completed?
Oh, the
Pogo mine.
Senator Hoffman, through the chair. The Pogo mine, I think, we hope to hear an announcement here very shortly that they poured their first gold bar, and they are in the process very quickly of getting up to full steam. So
their valuation is
certainly by the end of this year, they should be in full operation.
So their valuation at that time should be $250
million? I don't have that number in front of me.
Mr. Van Zandt, maybe.
Yeah.
Steve Van Zandt, can you answer that question?
Steve, are you on?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Can you answer that question, Steve?
Yes, ma'am. We're estimating it on the completion of the Pogo mine, it'll be in the neighborhood of $250 to $300 million until we get up there and actually look at their books.
Okay. Is that satisfactory to you, Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Stedman.
Yeah, the only person that likes property taxes is a king. I, along with most of the residents of the state, get property tax bills, and I certainly don't like writing them either. But anyway, you know, we've been struggling, as we're all aware, since statehood, on trying to get people organized into the boroughs. And you know, I'm willing to be a little bit flexible and try something different to see if we can accelerate that. And like Senator Wilkin has stated, there's areas in the state that clearly can do more to support their schools, which then would help alleviate the burden on the rest of the residents. So the potential loss of that mine in the future, it's 20 years or 25 or 30 years, certainly will have a big impact in the area surrounding it, just due to the buildup over the next couple of decades of that mine. And I was just kind of concerned that there doesn't seem to be some further reaching concepts of how to handle that when that unwinds. In my district, we've lost two large industrial plants that supported a lot of the infrastructure in the communities that they were in. So it is a real issue, and 20 to 30 years is a very short life. So in this mechanism, is there a way to block a backup if we go down this route? So in a couple of decades, we're not sitting here with an area that wants to dissolve and go back to where they are today.
Well, I think Senator Steadman, through the chair, I think the state has certainly the ability to mandate that the area stay a borough through legislative action. My hope is that as the area grows, if they can get the first step, past the first step, to say, all right, we're going to form, you know, we're going to start to develop some of our own infrastructure as far as government goes. Hopefully the people that are there will realize that they're getting a better bang for their buck by the services that can be offered. And once they've seen that happen, hopefully they won't, you know, say, well, we want to revert back to the 19th century or something like that. That they will see the value in the services. I mean, I think, most of the people there value the state troopers. They certainly value the Department of Transportation that plows the highways for them. They value Department of Environmental Conservation that comes in to check their wells or other things, and the Division of Ag and other things that the state offers, services that the state offers. So they do value government service. It's just this point in time they don't pay for them. And so they believe, of course, that, you know, that the state gets the money off the Trans-Alaska pipeline that goes through their area, so they are paying for it, they think. And that's something I've had to debate with them for the 8 years that I've been in the legislature, and I'm sure over time. But it's an effort. I mean, you know, I guess what we're trying to do is we're trying to take baby steps to get them to where we ultimately hope they'll be, and that's the best I can do at this point.
So I have a follow-up question. Kind of a almost a side issue in certain regards, but the 20 mil property tax on the TAPS pipeline. I think when we look at the split between the industry, the oil industry, and the government on the total revenue of the oil, along with the infrastructure. I think there's a tendency to counting the tax, whether it's the property tax or income tax or a severance tax or what have you, into the state share. And I think it's clearly debatable on that 20 mil property tax, that it shouldn't be coming to the state. The count is their share of the value of that resource coming out of the ground. We'll deal with that in another arena.
So, stepping through the chair, you know, I guess coming from Valdez, I probably dealt with it as much as anybody other than the North Slope Borough, maybe even more than Fairbanks. It is such a huge part of Valdez's tax base, and of course, that community has fought over the years the assessment evaluation of the value of the pipeline. So, you know, we can get into that. I can debate you on that for a long time. I don't want to debate you on that. What I'm just saying is that the people there, what we're dealing with in this piece of legislation, is a fear factor over property tax. And you got to get them past that somehow, and this is an attempt to get them past it.
Thank you, Member.
Senator Bundy.
Thank you. This is a relatively new occurrence, and so it may not have, you may not have had a chance to review it, but they are having hearings on a Senate bill about a borough light, and I'm just wondering how your option for a borough interrelates with that, and would they end up, are you aware if they'd end up at any cross purposes?
Senator Bundy, through the chair, I don't believe so. I think that what Senator Stevens is trying to do there is to give other options, you know, for formation. So this is just another one. I don't think they cross each other. I think they would complement each other.
Thank you.
Are there further questions? On the line is Lamar Cotton in Anchorage. Are you on to testify or for question answer only?
Madam Chair, just question answer only.
Thank you. Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Cotton?
I believe for the record, Madam Chair, that Mr. Cotton also, or at least was, I think, may be employed by the City of Delta.
Say it again. By the City of Delta?
I think he was. I think he may still be as one of their advisors toward attempted organization.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Representative Harris and Pete, and I'll set this aside and see if the members have any questions or any possible changes or questions they want to look at, and then we'll bring it up within a few days. Okay?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Next is Senate Bill 55 on agricultural land. We're having Land Day.
Land Day.
Mm-hmm. Land Day.
What could be more exciting?
I know.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, for letting me present this bill today. And for the record, my name is Amy Seitz, staff to Senator Wagner, who would have loved to have been here today, but ended up staying back in the district a bit longer than anticipated. Just a brief history about Senate Bill 55 and what it does. Senator Wagner introduced it to attempt to...
Pull the mic up just a little bit closer, please. Thank you, Amy.
Is that better? Senator Wagner introduced Senate Bill 55 to attempt to resolve an issue that's been going on with a 15-acre parcel of land in Hope and the Ross Miller family. The Millers own 27 acres of land in Hope, and they also leased 15 acres of state land as pasture land. Then in the 64 earthquake, 18 acres of their own land fell into the river. They lost it somehow. And through the earthquake exchange program, they were compensated for their loss by receiving 1 acre of federal land. And the state figured that was a bit unfair, not an adequate exchange, and so they gave the agricultural rights to the Miller family for the 15-acre parcel they had. And I guess there's some question on whether or not all the rights should have been given to the Millers at the time. And the Millers have been working with the Department of Natural Resources for many years, and they came to the conclusion that the only way to sell these rights to the Millers was through legislation. And so Senator Wagner last year introduced Senate Bill 55, kind of essentially the same as a bill Senator Torgerson had in 2001. And the requirements in the bill narrow it down so much that there's this one parcel of land that is affected. And the requirements are it has to be 15 acres used for agricultural purposes. And the state had to have originally received it from the National Forest under Section 6A of the Alaska Statehood Act. And then the people who are going to get the remaining rights have to pay the fair market value. And it repeals in December of this year, so there's a short time limit. And with that, I'll answer any questions, or Dick Milius from DNR is online, and the Miller family.
Okay. Are there any questions for Amy? Senator Bundy.
Perhaps for DNR, I'm just wondering what would the total purchase price be and where would the money go? Does that go to the general fund or does it go state land disposal fund? I'm curious as to how much and where does it go?
Well, I believe it'll just go into the general fund, but Dick may have a better answer for that. And the amount, there's not an amount yet because they haven't done the appraisal on the land. So, and I guess everyone's waiting until legislation is passed so they know if it'll be able to happen.
Okay, we can direct that to Dick Milius when he's on. Okay, Dick Milius. Oh, just a minute. No. Senator Stedman?
No, just in line for a question.
Okay, thank you. Dick Milius, could you interrupt?
Madam Chair, this is Dick Milius. I'm the acting director of the Department of Natural Resources Division of Mining, Land, and Water. And
Dick, could you sit back just a little from the microphone?
Okay.
Thank you.
Amy is correct in terms of that we don't know the value yet because we haven't done an appraisal, and that would be done after the legislation passed. And the money goes into it actually goes into the Land Disposal Income Fund, which is a special account within the general fund that's then used to pay for other, or the legislature then appropriates for other land disposal projects or for other purposes.
Is that satisfactory, Mr. Bud?
Yes, and I guess because they don't know what the amount is, then it should be perhaps an indeterminate fiscal note rather than a zero fiscal note. Right. I mean, that's a minor issue. But.
Okay. So somebody's referring to the fiscal note. Should it be an indeterminate fiscal note rather than zero? It doesn't show any income.
I'm assuming it will not cost more to sell the land than it brings in. So.
Okay. Anything else you want to offer, Dick Milius?
Senator, we could do an indeterminate fiscal note, but we do assume that the cost to sell it will be less than the amount of money that we take in.
Okay, thank you. The Miller family is on from Anilchik. Frank Miller?
Yes, good morning, Senator Green and Dick Milius and members of the Senate Finance Committee. My sister Linda Graham and I are co-owners of this piece of property. We inherited it from our parents who have passed away. And I support this bill because it will bring to an end a problem that we have had with the land. We can do very little with it. We cannot even divide the land to pass it on to our children. It's become sort of an albatross around our neck, and we'd certainly like to see this bill passed. And of course, if there was any way to reduce the finance impact on us, we would appreciate that as well. But that's not a condition on which we would like to see this passed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is this Russ with the Miller?
Yes, I'm the wife of Frank Miller, and I guess at this time I don't really have anything to add that what my husband already stated. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Charles Graham.
Good morning. My name is Chuck Graham. I'm a resident of Hope. I'm Linda Miller's husband, and I would like to speak in favor of this bill simply to bring resolution to something that has been a problem for 40 years. This is probably the only means of resolving the title to this property. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Bundy. Pardon me?
Yeah. No, for the gentleman just.
Oh, please. Yes. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Con Bundy. If the land is subdivided and an additional homes built there, I know Hope is working desperately to attract new families and to keep their school open. Is this a possible part of that solution where you might have additional homes available for people that have families that have children?
I couldn't give you a definite answer to that, other than it is a possibility. As it stands right now, this property can't be subdivided since it's less than 40 acres. And what we would like to do is to distribute this property among our kids. What they do with their reproductive life, I'm sure, will be up to them.
I wasn't asking for a commitment. So. All right, thank you.
This is Frank Miller. Could I speak to this issue also? One of the things that have brought this to a head is that my daughter Erica has become very much interested in residing at Hope, and so that's one of the reasons that it's a priority for us. and she would reside on a piece of this property. As far as helping the school, I'm not sure that that's the case. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Stedman.
Yes, Madam Chair, I have two questions. One of them, I assume that this transaction will not include subsurface rights. We're talking about just surface rights.
Right.
Amy?
Yeah, I believe just like any purchase of property nowadays, the subsurface rights would still belong to the state.
Right. I was just curious that there isn't any tie-in as to a pre-statehood issue. Another question I have, I support this bill. One of the things I don't want to see is set a precedence that can be applicable to the coastal communities, in that coastal communities, along with folks that deal along rivers, deal with accretion rights as mean high tide changes and your property line along the water body changes with the elevation of the plate in northern southeast here. We're losing a lot of ice, and we have a raising of the plate and accretion rights as the water front or your property line, the mean high tide, moves out. That also works in reverse if the plate happens to sink, you lose property. Mm-hmm. And this is a case apparently driven by an earthquake, but there was some loss of property. And I wouldn't want to set a precedence here where it's a one-sided issue, where the property could be expanded, but not shrunk in size. Mm-hmm. Is that very clear, Madam Chair?
Fairly clear.
Mm-hmm. Let me restate it another way. If, in fact, you were in an area that had, for some reason, a plate that was sinking due to accumulation of ice and or just a Mother Nature working it, you have, as a waterfront property owner, the potential of losing ground, mm-hmm. not gaining it.
Right.
On the other hand, if the mean high tide line recedes away from you, you can gain it. Of accretion. I just want to make sure that stays in balance, so it's not just a one-way issue where you can just gain and not lose.
Thank you. Dick, can you speak to that?
Senator Stedman, through the chair, regarding that specific issue, that doesn't apply here because this parcel is actually not on the shore or on it's an inland parcel, so there's no accretion type issues related to this parcel. The parcel that was referred to that the family originally owned was a different parcel, which was on the waterfront at Hope, which actually went down during the 64 earthquake and is now part of Turnagain Arm, or at least part of that parcel is now part of Turnagain Arm. And regarding the other question of subsurface, the subsurface rights would be retained by the state as they are in all land sales.
Thank you very much. Senator Bundy.
Just to point out that this bill is repealed at the end of this year as well, so at least this specific piece of legislation would mm-hmm. likely be used in other applications.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and I'm not sure who to direct this to, but what about the situation that Senator Stedman alluded to, where you're dealing with places that have extensive erosion going on within their community?
Maybe Dick Milius would want to answer that.
Is this for Dick Milius?
I don't know who to ask.
Did you hear Senator Olson's question, Dick?
Yes, I did, Senator Green. And Senator Olson, through the chair, in terms of erosion, as I said, at this parcel, it's not an issue, but as a general rule, there's kind of well-established principles about whether or not ownership boundaries change with erosion. And as a general rule, if a property goes to the shoreline, the boundary moves with the shoreline, so that if a parcel erodes away, the upland owner loses the land. If a parcel gains land from accretion, then the property owner gains title to it, and that's pretty standard property law and land survey law. Mm-hmm. The only exception to that is through what's called avulsion, which is a kind of a catastrophic event similar to the 1964 earthquake, where the property either raises or subsides significantly at an instant. And in the case of 64 earthquake, for example, parts of Prince William Sound rose, I believe, like 24 feet. Other parts fell like 10 feet or more. And in that case, the property boundary actually, by law, gets fixed at where it was before that avulsive event. A major flood can also do the same thing in terms of avulsion, but it actually has to be something that occurs at, you know, essentially an observable moment in time. And again, those are standards that are pretty well set in law.
That's satisfactory. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The next question I have for you, Mr. Milius, is that during this earthquake exchange program, how many other families were affected or took advantage of getting newer other lands because of the loss there due to the avulsion or other earthquake-related activities?
Senator Olson, through the chair, I don't actually have numbers, but there are quite a few because a lot of the property owners, for example, in Anchorage and the Turnagain where the big slide occurred, were granted other properties up on the Anchorage hillside. In Hope, I don't believe there were very many parcels affected. There may have been just several at Hope. I believe parcels, you know, like at Girdwood, at Portage, some other areas around Turnagain Arm got land under that program. But it was a significant number, and Kachemak Bay as well, there was a significant number of properties that or people that participated in that.
Last question,
yes, sir.
Madam Chairman. Why is it that you don't expect anyone else to qualify under this Senate Bill 55? In spite of the large number of people that participated in the program?
Senator Olson, the chair, most of the people got different property. They didn't get ag-only rights. Like in the case of the Anchorage folks, they got fee simple to parcels. I believe they're actually in the Zodiac Manor subdivision up on the hillside. So they actually had fee simple, so they didn't get agriculture-only rights, which these folks did. As far as I know, under these folks actually did not, the Graham Miller property actually wasn't the property that they got through that exchange program. It was kind of a parcel that was, I don't know the entire history of it, but it was kind of a substitute for lands that they felt they should have gotten under that original program. But anyhow, all the other folks that got land under that property got fee simple. They did not get agricultural only rights. So this is the only one we know of that got agricultural rights only. And then the other reason why it's limited in terms of its applicability is that this only allows us to sell agricultural rights to parcels that we acquired out of the National Forest, which is again limiting it to you know, just essentially it would theoretically Southeast Alaska, Prince William Sound, and the eastern part of the Kenai Peninsula.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Okay, we'll set this aside and get the revised fiscal notes and then work on it later. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anything else to come before the committee? Senator Wilkin, do you have announcements?
No, thanks.
Okay, on Thursday at 9 a.m., we will have Senate Bill 54, Protective Order for Sexual Assault, and HB 283, Alaska Housing Finance Corp Board Compensation. If there are no other comments or questions, Senate Finance is adjourned.